You're tuned to An American Atheist, and AmericanAtheist.org is the website and blog. My name is Chris, and I'm joined by Tom and Robin. This is episode 90. Notes and links for the show can be found at AnAmericanAtheist.org.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about Prop 8 a little bit. It's been in the news. Everyone knows about it. I mean, you got to be – other countries know about it probably even. It's such a big news topic, especially because it's in the U.S. Supreme Court right now. DOMA is also there too. I'm more interested in Prop 8 mostly because I'm from California and I think it's got some, you know, really important issues that could resolve some problems in some interesting ways. I've actually listened to the whole oral argument for Prop 8. You can find that online. We can provide a link too. It's pretty interesting. I kind of want to get your guys' ideas on it. How closely do you think religion plays a role in this? I mean, I know Prop 8 was heavily funded by, you know, the Mormon Church and other institutions. So do you guys think – I mean, I can't help but think some of the justices also have a sort of a religious moral perspective about it. We can get to that too. But you guys think this is still a religious issue and not just simply a secular homophobic kind of issue?
Yeah, I think it's both. I think most people recognize that you don't have to be religious to be homophobic, but it certainly helps.
It does seem like there's a lot of overlap between the two groups of people, in the same way that there's overlaps between strongly religious people and conservatives.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this too. It's really hard to draw causation for things, but I think that it's very clear to draw causation with religion and homophobia. At least larger groups.
I mean, it attracts the same sort of psychology. There's something comforting about conservatism and about very old tradition. There's, you know, about accepting answers and not worrying about open threads of philosophy and that sort of thing. I can see why it would attract the same sort of personality.
Right. So there's a couple issues going on with the Prop 8 case. The first is standing and whether or not proponents of the legislation for Prop 8 can stand in place of the government officials who are failing to defend it. So that's one issue, and they might just take that route. There's the sort of substantive merit issue, and gay rights are typically treated as one of two things. Typically, there's some other things you can do, but it's mostly this. It's mostly equal protection or due process. So those are basically two avenues people try and take. And the court can do really whatever they want with it if they choose to take that. And something that's interesting is Scalia, for example. So typically, if you look at something like – how do I phrase this? Typically, the gays and lesbians and people in that category usually, based on Romer and Lawrence, have to meet – the government has to meet rational basis – to plus something. It's kind of vague. Okay, I'm not going to get into it too much, but they have to meet rational basis for discriminating against homosexuals, right? So the government would have to have some sort of legitimate reason. It wouldn't have to be very strong. It's one of the lowest tests in constitutional law, right? So there's rational basis, intermediate scrutiny, strict scrutiny, right?
Right.
And rational basis is the lowest, but with Lawrence, it's a little weird. It's like rational basis, but maybe a little stronger than that. It's unclear.
Now, hold on. When defense of marriage was passed under Clinton by Congress, right, 96 or 97,
Something like that, yeah.
That never went before the Supreme Court in 96 or 97, though, right? It was simply passed into law?
Well,
is there a history? I mean, has DOMA been challenged before?
Okay, so this is the first time DOMA, I think, on the merits is getting to the U.S. Supreme Court, and this is where we're going to hear about DOMA. And in terms of gay marriage in general, they have an opportunity with the Prop 8 stuff to either make homosexuals a class that's protected and saying religion is a fundamental right, and that would have sweeping changes, or they can say, you know, there's a certain level of scrutiny required for dealing with homosexuals. So for example, if you look at rational basis right now, which is kind of the test, they have to submit some sort of reason why they're banning gays from getting married. One reason people might say, like with the popular argument right now, is it's because they're incentivizing reproduction, right? And so, which is kind of, I mean, all basically, if you listen to the oral arguments, all of the arguments they put forward are really bad.
Right. It's a, I mean, that's a fallacious argument for the obvious reason of like IVF and all the other things that plenty of gay couples have done.
Right. Yeah. And for example, I think it was Justice Kagan asking, well, what about 55-year-old couples? They can't have children. Why can they get married? How is that the purpose?
Sure. But we should take away marriage rights from elderly people. I think they're disgusting by and large.
And you don't want to think about old people getting it on, Chris.
No. I mean, they have. You've heard the rumors about how these retirement homes are hotter than high schools.
Didn't they have a Super Bowl commercial to that effect?
Oh yeah, I think
and
so.
There's increases in STDs in retirement homes.
Yeah, they have to worry about VD for the second time in their life, you know, since World War II.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of interesting. Justice Kagan, I believe it was Kagan, was pretty right on about asking about the 55-year-old couples, right, or sterile couples. And you could really get a sense from the court with the questioning that they really sort of get what's going on. And Justice Kennedy, who is the swing vote kind of in a lot of these cases, wrote the opinion for Lawrence and for Romer. So he's kind of a mysterious pro-gay person.
The Lawrence and the Romer cases?
So both of those are the sort of the precedent for this.
These are previous Supreme Court cases. It's two of them. It's not Lawrence and Romer. We're talking about two cases.
Those are two different cases. Okay. Lawrence v. Texas and Romer v. Evans or whatever. And so basically there's sodomy laws were outlawed.
I get that that's a thing. I'm just an immature teenager. You know?
Yeah. So that was in Lawrence v. Texas, which is really one of the bigger ones. It's really confusing what they mean and what the lower courts are confused by too about what the standards are for it. And so hopefully we get some clarification. Basically, you can't. Those are the first cases that give gays some sort of ability to challenge these really prohibitive discriminatory laws, basically, because in the one case, cops walk into this house and there's two men having, you know, homosexual sex, and it's normally not prosecuted, right? Because it just wasn't very often, and they choose to prosecute these guys.
Right,
and
who cares? Yeah.
And then it comes up to that, and it's still on the books in a couple of places when it passed. But interestingly, the courts ruled in the past that you can't use a moral argument to say that's a rational basis for this for marriage discrimination. So that's where religion would fit in. Right, is just a moral repugnance kind of thing.
But when you were talking about weak arguments earlier, and you were saying the reproductive argument, you know, which is thrown away by elderly people, isn't the need for reproduction technically a moral argument? I mean, that's your sort of moral opinion that mankind should not die off. I mean, it seems weird that you can't use morality as a basis. What does the court actually use? Does the court operate in a vacuum?
Okay, so I think that if you
we shouldn't go that deep on the purpose of justice, but.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you cabin morality morality includes almost the whole judiciary, if you have that broader definition, what they usually mean by you can't have just a moral basis is you can't have something like it just offends my sense of right and wrong because I'm a religious person.
Oh, like a personal morality as opposed to a social morality?
It can be a social morality too, but the social morality of religion is insufficient, for example. Just thinking that homosexuality is wrong does not satisfy rational basis in this sort of analysis.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But Scalia still thinks that it does. So if you listen to the oral arguments, Scalia and probably Thomas also think that morality is still fine. So if you are offended by just the nature of homosexuals marrying and it offends your religion, for example, then that's okay for him. But the prior rulings, that's not okay. So he's just trying to continue to sway the court into a more homophobic kind of direction, which his perspective by talking like that, and you can listen to his sort of he writes the dissent in Lawrence also. He's just really vile about it all, and that really helps the court recognize the animosity that a lot of people have towards homosexuals. But basically, by and large, religion alone doesn't seem to be a good enough argument. They have to have these other arguments like reproduction, right? So basically, long story short, especially – I mean, if you look at all the social media and the acceptance of gay marriage, it passed over 50% threshold of I think last year, right, acceptance of gay marriage. And if you look at all the effects on social media, a lot of people say like social media, who cares? I think it's a good metric to show there's overwhelming support, I think, now in a lot of communities, and I think a rising majority in the nation to support gay marriage. So I think whatever way these turn out, it's pretty optimistic for the whole thing.
We'll have to link it on the blog, but there was a good article written by one of the tech sites about why the seemingly frivolous act of changing your profile picture to an equality sign actually had a measurable effect. I mean, Facebook did a study recently, and they saw the sort of social change propagate, you know, when you saw that your close friends were actually doing this, that might sway people's minds, or indicators started flipping. And
right.
It was a fascinating read, but
I think that there's some argument to people saying that social media has very limited effect, but I think they're still useful in a lot of ways.
It matters.
And like Robin, for example, you're into a lot of activism, if I can call it that, right?
Yep, that's what we call it.
Radical Robin, we call it.
I don't mean to be derogatory. I just mean to say...
Isn't that weird that radical is derogatory?
Well, no, he said activism.
Whatever, activist is derogatory.
Which is even more mild.
Which is very strange, actually. I mean, this is coming
from
someone
who's... You can be a conservative activist, you know?
You can.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm hesitant with people, especially with self-labels. That don't matter.
You're on a godless podcast saying this, too. I mean,
don't call me a liberal, Tom.
I would dare call you a liberal. What, do you think social media is effective when you're conveying messages?
Sure. It's effective, and, you know, it has a role to play that can make some sort of difference and impact. The problem is I don't know how independently effective it is. I think social media can aggravate and multiply a trend that already has a more independent basis, but I don't think it can fabricate it out of nowhere. But I think it's helpful for sure.
Oh, you mean as a catalyst, not as a... It's effective, an effective catalyst is basically what you're saying, right?
Right. Well, I'm saying, you know, the reason this whole reproduction of the Human Rights Campaign logo on social networks has become very effective is it's kind of a way to get people to rally behind an opinion they already shared, but it's a very easy, accessible thing to do. And then once a certain threshold number of people do it, then more and more people do it, and more and more people do it, and so on. But I don't know how many people it will end up convincing. I didn't support gay marriage before, but now I do because I'm sort of being forced to think about the issue because everybody on my Facebook feed has equal signs. I don't think that won't happen. I think that will. But what I'm saying is I think it gets its momentum from those opinions already being on the ground by and large.
Yeah, okay. I kind of get where the people who are saying like, hey, these equal signs and stuff are kind of stupid and annoy me. Maybe not equal signs, but other similar things. I kind of get that. Like, I'll see something else for some other cause. I'm like, I don't care, man. Like, I don't care about saving something in some place, right? I kind of get
that. How dare you, like, make me think about something I don't care about? Tom?
Sorry. Yeah, I mean, totally. sorry, it's like, I was
pondering. I was making fun of you, but then you were so silent. I'm like, did I actually?
No.
Shit.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was in my own world. I spent a lot of time there. I sort of get where they're coming from when they disagree. But I agree with you too, though. It's like, and Chris's article you're mentioning, I think there's tangible effects to a lot of it. And I mean, it sounds kind of like, of course, internet helps with stuff like spreading ideas and stuff. Like, so it's what it does by nature, right? But I think I really was happy with the whole equals campaign stuff on everything. I thought it did something. It made me feel like there's more solidarity with the gay rights movement. And I think I've actually read a lot of messages on posts and from talking to some of my gay friends about how they were actually really touched by it. Because if you spent so long being oppressed and bullied and treated as an other, that outcry and support really has an emotional effect on some of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a good thing. I see the reason for some of the hate, but it's a good thing, I think. So basically, I think that regardless of what the Supreme Court does with all of it, I think that we're on a pretty clear, in my mind, pretty clear track to – I mean, there's some hurdles, but pretty clear track to marriage equality and gay rights. And religion seems to be a pretty bad argument that does not work like it used to. If you read some old cases about transgenders or gays, the court will use God language.
Sure.
You'll say you were born a man, for example, in transgender cases. That's the way God made you, et cetera, right?
Well, even in the DOMA arguments back in the 90s in Congress, it was the family unit was the big, you know, they were still talking about the same sort of cultural identity that somehow is intertwined with Christianity for some reason, even though that's not, you know, by definition Christian. I mean, that was still the argument to get that stuff to pass in the first place.
Yeah, and I still think it's effective in the public, though. I think that's actually one of the core appeals. It doesn't make any sense to me, obviously, because I don't subscribe to those.
Well, and studies have shown that psychologically kids are not necessarily better or worse off with heterosexual versus homosexual parents. It has no discernible effect, at least according to some respected studies I've seen.
Well, that's actually part of the oral arguments, too. They even mention things like that, and those are in the briefs. And with those, for example, Scalia will say, well, this is kind of brief. This isn't very much data. Even Kennedy concedes to that, that we've only got a few years of people being married with kids in certain states, seeing what the effect is, which is kind of stupid. But
well, what was – gosh, was it Kennedy who just made the argument the other day about well, you know, this coming up as an issue, it's younger than the internet and cell phones. Was that him? Do you remember the quote I'm
talking
about?
I think it was Kennedy. I don't remember who it was, but I remember hearing that, yeah.
Yeah. What a stupid thing to say.
I mean, I don't think that's right. I agree with you. I think that's just wrong.
The man's supposedly smarter than me, but you can see that people have their off days for, you know, shit's sake.
Right. And I mean, homosexuality, for example, itself is a very old thing.
Birds do it, bees do it, yeah.
Yeah, and it's even just looking at human history is such an old thing. And there's actually data about lesbian couples having little or no domestic violence and no child abuse. They have statistically lower levels because there's no men involved, and I'm a man. I don't mean to men.
Hey, but, you know, car insurance rates are higher for men because statistically that's how it works out.
Oh, well, there you go.
I mean, that's – there you go.
We might only have – 4 or 5 years or so of data on same-sex couples who married and had children. In terms of same-sex couples having children, though, even if they're not officially or legally married, I'm sure we have a little bit more than 5 years on that. I mean, I think we'd at least have like a decade or something, right? They've been adopting children since the 90s, I would think.
And yeah, ultimately my position is on that is it doesn't matter because I'm of the view that people's rights are being infringed upon. I don't really care about all this extra stuff, you know?
Yeah, I don't either. That just seems a little fallacious to me, like this idea that, you know, we only discovered the concept and practice of same-sex couples raising children is, you know, in the last couple of years. That's not true, right? And they've been doing it unofficially for probably much longer than that. So
sure. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. The court is very skeptical to spend its currency of trust that it has. You know, the public trusts them generally to make decisions. And so they're a little like after Citizens United and stuff, we're like, oh, yeah, right. Yeah. Well, I'm a liberal, so I'm, you know what I mean, to impose that on everybody. We have some conservative listeners that I'm going to alienate, unlike Robin, who loves alienating.
I'm already alienating.
So
I can't believe I'm still listening.
Right, I don't know.
Thank you. So you're so tolerant.
The court is skeptical also because if you look at decisions like Roe v. Wade, what happened was the country was already going towards abortion rights anyway. Lots of states were going that direction. And the court felt that when they made the decision in Roe, that it was really abrupt and it caused a lot of backlash. So there's also an argument like the court's a little hesitant because they see the direction it's going in and they don't want – since it's already coupled with religious fervor and deep passionate feelings about the issue, they don't want to have this huge resurgence and maybe have some setbacks because certain areas of the country aren't ready for things like that.
Now, so who's they in this formulation? Court justices?
A couple of the justices have expressed that. One of the female justices in Roe, I don't remember who, I think it was it. I'll have to look into that, but it was one of the female justices in the Roe opinion. And a couple of the other justices, I think, have had that sentiment.
Right. Now, I've heard this sentiment too, incidentally, not just from discussions around the Supreme Court and how they should handle a situation like this. But I was also listening to a sports station the other day, and they were talking about how there's supposedly an NFL player that's gay who's thinking about coming out. And all the sports commentators were, it was quite clear that they were, you know, pro gay rights and not homophobic. But at the same time, they did a lot of, well, is everybody ready for this? What's going to happen? Is everybody going to be behind this? Is everybody, you know, in the NFL going to be able to tolerate this? And I came upon something yesterday that somebody was writing that said, I'm highly suspicious. I don't like any argument which could be used against the civil rights movement. And I have to say that these sort of arguments strike me in the same way. No matter when we do this, when this happens, whether it's the Supreme Court, which finally makes gay marriage legal, or if it creeps across the states, or if the national legislature decides to and declare it the law of the land, there's going to be a whole lot of pissed off people. And there's going to be a huge political backlash and a lot of political consequences. And that's just unavoidable. And in fact, the change that we're looking for to get people to realize that whatever reasons they have, religiously inspired or more remotely secular, for opposing the equal right of people to be full citizens, getting them to realize that is in fact bigoted, I don't care how much you say that you love the sinner but not the sin, it requires actually going ahead and making the law of the land reflect the best principles that the country wants to advance. And you're not, you know, you're never going to be able to just sit around and wait for the South to stop being racist. Let's give it a couple more decades. Let's talk to them a little bit more. Let's negotiate with the moderates so we don't alienate all those nice racists out there. You know, it's not going to work. What is going to work is to institute the change as the official social, legal, and moral policy of the country, which kind of requires everybody else to either get in line or become completely irrelevant.
Well, I think your example also extends to like don't ask, don't tell.
Right.
Because a lot of people are like, well, I don't know if we can handle this. And I mean, seems pretty fine now. But I think that's a similar argument in terms of what you're talking about with sports teams because of the hesitance. But I think the military was generally, you know, a lot of people, even the people who I knew who were pro-gay, if you want to call it that, were hesitant about it because of those reservations, which is kind of interesting. And this is another case that proponents of gay marriage also rely on is the Loving case, which was the interracial marriage, one of the first interracial marriage cases, Loving. And it kind of goes to with what you're saying is it's like, well, waiting's all great and all, but if this is actually a right someone has or they're incurring damages in some way, we need to fix it. And if society doesn't like it, that sucks. Too bad. Because that's what they deserve.
Right. And the larger point is that society will actually come more rapidly around to the correct position if you force them to, in a sense. And by force,
because the South won't.
Right. I just mean, right, make the conditions such that people aren't allowed to discriminate anymore. If there's legal consequences to being bigoted, people tend to be less bigoted, at least overtly. Unfortunately, they have a whole host of ways of getting to still be bigoted and getting a lot of what they want anyways. But it's still much better, right, than the prevailing situation before. Also, I also saw read an argument recently which reflects directly on the issue of anti-gay marriage attitudes and religion, which I thought was really smart, which said nowadays people who are opposed to gay marriage on grounds of traditionalism, which very often, almost always, they root in some sort of religious understanding of marriage. Sure. These people are very careful to paint themselves as not bigoted, to come up with these rationales for opposing gay marriage, which does not appear to make them seem homophobic and terrified of gay people in general. But what this person argued, if anybody wants to go read the whole argument, it's on a great blog called The Crooked Timber, was that any type of argument they articulate that distinguishes between thinking that gay people and everything about gay people is wrong and bad and sinful, distinguishing between that position and being opposed to gay marriage in particular is actually a very anti-traditional position to take. There's nothing in the Christian tradition, at least definitely practiced by Christians culturally and their attitudes towards homosexuality and homosexuals, that disentangles those two things. The traditional position is a bigoted position, in other words. So if they want to claim that they're traditionalists and they're not bigoted, they can't really do it because the traditional position historically is all wrapped up in bigotry. So their whole sort of intellectual justification is ripped apart by the fact that historically there's no case for calling their position, which intellectually doesn't make any sense anyways, logically doesn't make any sense. There's no position for calling it traditional. So, of course, you know, they're just trying something for nothing. But it's very telling that even these people nowadays who are sitting there making these 19th century arguments that were equally applicable to racism, you know, 150, 200 years ago. Well, excuse me, 50 years ago, right? When we're 60 years ago, when we're still fighting for ending segregation, that even these people are trying to be like, but we're not bigoted, right? That tells you exactly how much they're losing.
That's really fascinating, because I actually wanted to try and bring up, and you've just demonstrated it, like the decoupled nature of religious belief and the culture that grows around it, because it really is, it grew antiquated a long time ago, and their religious culture has to move on beyond the text. That's why Tom and I sometimes bicker about whether we should hold their feet to the fire and that sort of thing, that they do have a sort of very arbitrary culture that's no longer rooted in their own text strictly, in the way that, you know, a scientist might root their theories straightly, you know, like strictly in empiricism or something
like
that.
You mean regardless of their affirmations?
But that's,
I'm not belittling. I'm just saying I think that some people are of that persuasion, and I see your point.
Yeah.
Oh, and I wanted to point out, it's Ruth Bader Ginsburg. That's who I thought it was. And she said, it's not that the judgment was wrong in regards to Roe, but that it moved too far too fast, to quote her. And she was giving a lecture at a symposium at Columbia Law School. Chris, so sorry, I didn't mean to cut your steam down there. But I think you have a valid point there about that it doesn't, for many people, it doesn't seem to even really come from the text. And they can cherry pick everything.
Yeah, it's not strictly obvious where you can quote bits of the Bible that are interpreted in multiple ways, you know, which some people reinterpret that, you know, don't lay with a man like a woman thing as like a slavery issue or something. But it just speaks, I think, to the decoupled nature of the religious text and the religious community. They're not, you know, it's strange. It's definitely like some sort of social psychosis or something.
Yeah, it
follows its own logic, you know.
I think we're hitting a lot of things, both of you. It just seems – it's kind of frustrating how nuanced and complicated this is, mm-hmm. because of how many factors influence someone's opinions about these issues. I think that we can all agree that religion plays at least a hefty part, at least when you're looking at the large scale.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's interesting. Even when religion is not put forward as the direct – source of someone's anti-gay marriage viewpoints, it's still playing this weird sort of regulating role in the background. So I'll give you an example of what I mean. Somebody who I'm very familiar with their views on gay marriage is anti-gay marriage. But her argument is that marriage should no longer really be something that the state does anymore, that it should entirely be a function of religious civil unions. Basically, you can only get married if it's within a religious institution. But what's interesting is this person is not particularly religious. They aren't Christian even, but they're definitely not an atheist. They definitely believe in God. I should say she. Sorry, I've let that out of the bag. Right. But nonetheless, she identifies as a traditionalist. And she does seem to do this thing where, in order to avoid the argument of there's absolutely no reason to deny this group of people the right to marry when everybody else is getting married, she says, okay, well, let's just completely actually redefine what marriage has been the past, you know, let's just say, just for the sake of argument, like at least, right, all of U.S. history, which has been something that has not solely been within religious institutions, but has involved the state as well, and confine it to a completely religious institution and deny everybody else what we call marriage and every legal privilege and social acknowledgement that goes along with marriage and make it completely religious just so I can avoid having to consider gay people married in the same way right. that straight couples are. And that's just bizarre. Because she's not religious. And so theoretically, her own marriage would be excluded from this formulation.
Gays are against gay marriage. It's weird.
But yeah, that's another.
That's
also
a whole other ballpark. Yeah,
it's a rabbit hole.
Ball, yeah.
But again, here, so it's like, even though this person is not religious, it's in some sense she is in sympathy with the whole religious mindset and worldview, because she's viewing it as a place where, you know, we can. Retreat to preserve what marriage actually is supposed to be. And then she's taking on libertarian views to sort of rationalize in her mind the fact that she's willing to redefine what marriage has been in this country for its entire history just to prevent it from expanding to the point where it includes gay people. You know, for me, I find that pretty funny. I'm like, don't you realize what you're doing? You're coming off as desperate here. But, you know, it doesn't seem that way to her. It's whatever she needs to do to keep the institution traditional, whatever that means in her mind, you know, is the appropriate action to take.
Well, let me pose this to you guys, because I think this what I'm about to offer is a fairly atheist friendly perspective that some atheists have, where you say, okay, yeah, let's not have marriage, like she's saying, but basically just don't have anything like that at all, and we just have private contracts for each other. And if people want to have private contracts that are also religious in nature, they can. So I guess it's kind of what that person's saying. But I mean, you could still have property agreements with each other, and it's kind of a libertarian perspective, because you're just getting the government out of it, right?
Right.
Because the government's incentivizing certain behavior or not, right?
Right.
But you could still have contractual marriage. And then you could have religious institutions that could add on top of those contractual marriages. So what do you think?
Well, I think the problem that strikes me on that is, with the absence of homosexual issues, no one is clamoring for that to be the way marriage works. Mm-hmm. So it strikes me as a form of escapism.
And I think staunch libertarians might like that perspective, though.
Yeah, but,
but I agree with you. Yeah,
they're few and far between.
Well, France was trying to do this for a while. It was actually one of their plans, is to move in that direction.
But was that a religious thing? Was that, I mean, did that have to do with homosexuality, or did it have to do with some of their other cultural influences? I mean, they have frictionful immigration and all sorts of other issues there.
Yeah, they are very unique, and I'm not an expert on that, but it was a mix of things. Mm-hmm. But those, you know, the gay stuff and religious stuff did play a part in that.
I mean, I know it's impossible to decouple the existence of homosexual issues being who we are and what time we live in, but it just seems to me like that's completely avoidant.
Yeah, and I've actually talked to you about this before too, and you sort of thought that the state has a legitimate interest in sort of having the construct of marriage, and so it does seem sort of like, well, that's kind of an extreme route. I don't think we'll ever get there anyway. And so it's not really an effective route to try and take if you're trying to get equality and you're trying to, because it is kind of irritating being an atheist and having so many religious connotations to marriage. I was talking over a resume with a workshop or something like that. And the guy asks me, some basic questions, like just to chat me up, I guess. I mean, he wasn't like selling me anything, but he's like, oh, so you're atheist, right? I was like, yeah. Cause it's on my resume, because of this. So we start talking, and he's like, oh, so like, he asked me questions like, do they get like married and stuff? And I'm just like, such a weird world I entered with that. Do you know what I mean? This really was my conversation. I was like, oh yeah, we do.
It's yeah, it's like what do atheists eat? You know, it's like one of those sort of questions.
Well, that's how I felt when he asked me. I'm like, that's weird, right?
Yeah.
And then I've actually had conversations with people more than just this, where I sit down and explain, well, it's not about appearing in front of God and having your vows unified and respected by God. It's about appearing in front of your loved ones and celebrating your care and love for one another, sitting down like they're like a child and explaining it to them. You know what I mean? Because to me, that's absurd. Like, I have no idea how you're coming from that position. Like, that makes no sense to me, right? I mean, I respect people who don't want to get married. I totally can understand where they're coming from. But you have people who have a religious perspective that just, they can't even conceive of the notion of people being atheists and getting married, which is bizarre.
Very bizarre.
You have any questions, listeners on the show, about anything I talked about? Because I went kind of quickly and admittedly clumsily through the issues. You can send us an email through the contact. I'll respond to people individually about it, regardless of how incompetent I sound. I actually know some a bit about it. And I can make a post if enough people have specific questions about it, clarifying some of the issues in Prop 8 specifically, or DOMA if they really want. Chris, actually, before the show, we were talking about the Pope, and you said I was wrong because I shouldn't even be calling him that.
You shouldn't be calling him that. He doesn't call himself that. He calls himself the Bishop of Rome, actually. And this is just a little – this is your Pope update for the week. We have a new Pope. Pope Cam 5 coming at you from the
highway.
You're
calling him that again too, though, or do we just not?
Bishop of Rome Cam 5 coming at you from the highway. No, there's just been a couple of minor bits of Pope news that have come out just for your knowledge. Because he's new and everyone's curious, he's dressing simply. He washed the feet of some prisoners instead of, I think it's typically bishops or something like that, including one of them was a Arab woman or a Muslim woman. And he actually paid his hotel bill, you know, which was interesting. I guess they don't pay normally. And, you know, he's basically coming out as a bit more of a champion for the poor. I don't really know what there is to say about this. This is just characterization for you as we learn who Francis I is.
I believe that the National Review, it might be another right-wing journal, but one of them, had a profile on him after he was selected, and it read along the lines of, now, although he's very concerned about the poor, don't worry, he doesn't, you know, he also believes in responsibility. Like, they were concerned.
Oh, okay.
This characteristic is very suspicious.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, because all we've been over this before. It's been shown empirically that all people who are poor, destitute, or irresponsible is the line that the journal was taking, right?
Jesus drank and drive. That's what he did.
right. Yeah. But yeah. You know, so this is who Francis is so far.
I mean, I think it's good, right?
I mean, we'll see. I mean, there have been some stories, and who knows who's penning these stories, because it's very early and everyone has yet to do their research. But about, you know, during one of the last overthrows of the government, you know, down in Buenos Aires, he was, you know, one of those secret priests who was helping out, you know, the bad government, point out people in church, or, you know, who knows? I mean, I think it's really early to tell on this. And it's also probably boring some people too, because who cares really about the Pope at the end of the day? I mean, I suppose it's important, but the policy set by the Catholic Church moves so slowly that you'd best not look to Pope news for your hopes. Don't have hope in the Pope.
Right. Yeah. It's a good slogan. Because you like the important stuff. Like, that's great. It's symbolically more appropriate and less like offensive. Because if you look at some of they have comparisons of Ratzinger and the new Pope or Bishop of Rome. And there's pretty striking the way they dress and present themselves in some of these events. But yeah, I mean, the important stuff, pretty dark age still on how their views are on some important issues, you know, like contraceptives. They aren't not very responsible on those and some other issues.
Mm-hmm. But
yeah. It is regarded as a fairly conventional choice, according to the New York Times, though, for for Pope. Vigorously backs Vatican positions on abortion, gay marriage, the ordination of women, and other major issues.
Yeah.
But, you know, what are you going to expect from the Catholic Church? I have, however, located that National Review quote I was talking about. It is. His counting poverty as a social ill should not be misconstrued as sympathy for statist solutions to it, or indeed as support for any determinate political program. So I don't see. Worry.
He's not pro-welfare is what you're telling me.
Exactly.
Okay. All right.
Jeez. Jesus.
No free lunch.
That's
okay.
That's National Review doing damage control.
Oh, boy. That's ridiculous. I mean, I kind of almost wish he were, like, more extreme than Ratzinger in, like, every way, and then just alienates more people, and then we just have less of a problem with it.
Like maybe like an atheist pope would be nice, you know?
I actually played that scenario.
Yeah, where are we represented in the Catholic Church?
Right.
Yeah, what are they doing for us?
That actually brings up... sorry to do a little bit of out of order conversation here, but also on that issue of gay marriage and, let's say, religious institutions, the same person I was talking about before also caricatured a pro-gay marriage person's views as saying she won't be satisfied until any gay person can walk into any church in America and get married. And I was like, well, right now, straight couples can't walk into a Mormon tabernacle and get married. So I don't think that's quite what she meant.
Yeah.
But I love that also, that sort of slippery slope argument, right? That religious liberties are going to be destroyed if gay people can get married. And wait a minute, like, churches still have control over who join their churches.
They do.
Yeah. And who gets married in their churches. I mean, under certain conditions, you could probably still exclude black people from your church if your church is like the church of white supremacy or whatever.
No, there's...
You won't be tax exempt, but, you know, you can't get everything you want.
I today, I decided recently to help some friends out by officiating their wedding, but they're fortunately non-denominational, because if they were, say... if they were Mormon or something, I don't know that I could even do it. I mean, you know, like, there are still all sorts of restrictions and controls that churches maintain in ways that are unrelated.
Okay.
I'm quite excited.
That is really cool.
Yeah.
I'm glad that people are having friends and loved ones or other people officiate weddings instead of the traditional sort of priest.
It makes
rabbi
a lot of sense,
of
yeah. Having some stranger paid $100.
Ceremonies, because they're much more, you know, personalized and interesting and allow for a lot more emotionally expressive things like laughter and such. I think officiants are great. My sister also officiates weddings, and she does a great job.
Oh,
and she was married by a gay man. It was a wonderful thing.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know what I hate is... religious funerals, and I'm just a hateful person anyway, but it bothers me. And you'll have priests who don't know these people, don't know what to, they're just picking random passages or passages they always say.
Yeah,
they have no idea who these people are, and they're speaking about them. I mean, if the deceased person wants it or the family wants it, you know, I'm not trying to say like, oh, they shouldn't do that. You know, respect people's wishes, but I just think it's stupid.
But you know how it is. It's like you're part of this whole Catholic community in your town, and, you know, Joe dies, and this is everyone's pastor or priest comes and gives the thing. I mean, that's where that comes from.
Right.
They used to be people everybody knew, or they still are in some close.
Some are, yeah. But generally, I think no.
That would be strange.
Yeah.
I guess that does happen, but that would be very strange.
Just, at many of the funerals I've been to.
Who's this guy? Yeah. Huh.
They had no idea who the person, the deceased was. And I mean, like I said, respect family's wishes and everything. It's just, it's a weird tradition that some people go to great lengths to achieve, even with people they have no idea, that, you know, don't know the deceased at all, or on a very limited basis.
Right.
So I think that secular oratory is much preferred. In my book.
Secular oratory. That sounds very sexy.
That sounds hot, doesn't it? No, it sounds like a place where that happens, the oratory, right?
Secular oratorium?
It's legal in Canada, but you're not allowed to advertise. Let's go ahead and just cut it there. If you have any comments or questions, go to anamericanatheist.org/contact. And otherwise, we'll see you next time.